Hi, this is Brian Rutson from the Northman, Chicago's first cider bar, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode number 65.
We can't wait to go to Chicago's first cider bar. What is it called?
The Northman.
Thank you, Mr. Quince. Hey, Perry, what do you want to do when we go to Chicago?
Frankly, I'm looking forward to the French presentation on Perry. France, many people don't know, has a museum dedicated to Perry Pears. I wish this Chicago CiderCon had more workshops on Perry Pears, because I heard a story the other day that some nincompoop spit a Perry Pear out onto the ground thinking we were culinary pears. Why, I...
Let's get this barrel rolling, Perry, and start packing for Chicago.
Right. Does anyone know where I put my chapeau? Chicago can be quite chilly in February, and they do call it the Windy City.
The Windy City.
The Windy City. The Windy City.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Wincoller, and I am your Cider MC and the producer of this weekly podcast, where we speak with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are in Chicago, finding out the backscene story to all the great places to visit, how to get there, and speaking with Brian Rutson of the Northman, the first cider bar in the city. We got a lot going on this week's chat that we'll get to in just a moment. The Medlars, Mr. Quince, Perry, and myself are all headed to Chicago for a whole bunch of activities starting on February 7th at the Northman. And then it's CiderCon starting on February 8th through the 10th. And then on the 11th, it's the Chicago Cider Summit, which is an all-day cider festival. There'll be links to all this for this episode 65 in the show notes. So I've been scratching my head trying to figure out what could I do to actually help me afford this trip. Because as you might expect, a podcast, you know, how do you monetize that? I mean, it's kind of like people coming into your cider bar or grabbing cider bottles off your shelf and just walking out the door and consuming it without ever actually kicking back, not even bringing you a cider donut to say, hey, thank you. I mean, emails are really awesome. Don't get me wrong. I certainly appreciate it all. But, you know, it all comes down to making sure you can make your ends meet like everybody else. So one of the ingenious ways, I think, was to reach out to Uber and ask them if they would be willing to have a Cider Chat be one of their affiliates. And they said yes. Now, last week, episode number 64, if you were listening, I put out the promo code CiderChat. Well, there's been a little change to that, and I want to get you update now. Uber, first of all, is a taxi service, essentially where folks like you and I drive other folks around town. Super duper easy. First, you need to download the Uber app, and you can do that on your Android or iOS phone. Then, once you put in your profile, you'll then see an option to put in a promo code for your first ride. So if you put in all capital letters, Cider Chat, and then the number 10, you're good to go for getting $10 off your first ride. And the nice thing is that for every person that signs up and uses that promo code, Cider Chat gets $5 back. And it doesn't cost you a thing except a moment of your time. So I'm hoping that you think that's wonderful and it'll make your life a little bit easier, whether you're in Chicago or any other place in the United States. This is, at this point, USA only. So let's see if we can make it work and help out this podcast to help keep it thriving, bringing you chats like this one today, all on Chicago to help you maneuver around the city and make your cider experience go down as smooth as can be. If you need more info on this, just go to aciderchat.com/Uber and you'll come to the page that will give you all the details and you can see what the promo code looks like. Thank you for supporting this Cider-Centric podcast. Yay! Before we go into our main chat this week, we're going to take a little detour with someone else from Chicago. So let's head there right now. Okay, Ciderville, we have Michelle Foyk from Chicago. And Michelle is a really like go-getter gal. She was super involved in last year's CiderCon. You saw her going all over the place, kind of the person who kind of is holding so much of it. And I know, Michelle, that you're holding a lot this year at the Chicago CiderCon that's coming up. And I'm really delighted that we get to chat about the tastings that are going to be taking place. There's actually 8 tastings that we're counting. And so Michelle and I are going to just chit-chat about those. And first of all, I just want to just welcome you to Cider Chat today.
Thank you very much, Rhea. It's great to be here, actually. I'm excited. I got to watch you doing a lot of interviews with other people last year, and so I was kind of envious. Like, when do I get my chance?
Well, I'm excited to talk about this tasting, but I also know that you and I should be talking, and hopefully we'll get a little bit about what you're doing in Chicago around cider. But let's first go into the tastings and then catch up from there. Let's just begin with that first tasting that begins on Wednesday afternoon. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Wednesday afternoon tasting is actually our cider share. The cider share is an opportunity for all the vendors or cider makers to come in and be able to share their products with everybody else that's attending CiderCon. We have over 125 different cider makers that are participating in the cider share. Each cider maker is...
Let me just interrupt you for a second. So 125 cider makers, they've all shipped all their cider there already, or it's on its way. And this is a place where everybody kind of comes in and gathers around tables in a really large room. Is that what we can expect?
Exactly. It's exactly what it is. It's a share. So what we have is the cider is usually, if it's only 4 bottles, because it's not a large amount of cider that's coming in, it's really honestly just a share. It's 4 bottles per vendor or cider maker. And basically, it's one cider person bringing those in. We are open to CiderCon registered guests, and that's the only people that could be in that room. It's not open to the public. This is just for the vendors and the cider makers that are involved in CiderCon. We also have, with the idea of the 4 bottles, we are able to share with everybody in the room. So you bring your 4 bottles from your room, and we bring it downstairs. This is actually all on the cider makers.
Okay, great. I know last year's event was fantastic. That took place at offsite from the main conference center, but this is going to be right at the Chicago Hilton. Is that correct?
Correct. This is at the Chicago Hilton, and it's not the big ceremony that we had in Portland last year. This share is more relaxed. It's a little bit on the cider makers to provide their cider downstairs. They're able to chat about their cider to other cider makers and be able to taste everyone else's. So we're doing more of a relaxed kind of concept just to bring everybody in to show them these are our peers. These are the people that we're going to be visiting all week long through the different seminars and try each other's cider, because the United States is very big. We have an international area too. So it's going to be a fun and exciting event.
Mm-hmm. And is there any like little nibbles during this event, or should people kind of like munch before they go down?
No, we'll actually have some appetizers also.
Okay.
So we'll have appetizers, there'll be pass, little finger foods.
Great. I know that I'm really looking forward to that. Okay, well, let's go on to the next day, because that's the main one that happens on Wednesday. And then on Thursday is the first one. Am I correct in saying the first one is on the French Perry?
Correct. Correct. So this year's theme of CiderCon is French cider producers. So a lot of our educational seminars that are revolving around tasting have French producers coming in to the United States and being able to talk about their products. In the past, we had English and Spanish. And so this year, we thought it would be best to bring and feature the French.
Cool.
So the first, yeah, it's very exciting. We're very excited to see the French cider makers. They have been probably doing it the longest. Their process of making French cider is just fantastic. And we want to educate people about how they do it. You know, is this a possible method for American cider to be made this way? You know, a lot of unknowns, but a lot of excitingness to it.
Mm-hmm. So there's two French cider makers that are going to be presenting that workshop. And I think the first one is Guyon June, and then it's a female. And Michelle and I are going to be kind of struggling through these pronunciations, but I think it's Ghislaine Davy. So Monsieur Duan and Madame Davy. And I think that Duan is from Rouen. I think they have an office in Rouen. And they're a Normandy cidery and Perry, or as in French they call it, Poiré. Michelle, can you tell us a little bit about that Perry tasting and what we could expect?
What we're expecting at the cider Perry tasting is two different producers from France. The reason why we brought in two different producers is because we thought that it'd be good to educate people on two different types of Perry that is produced out of France. Perry pears, we talked about last year. We had an English cider maker come in last year, and this year we have the French cider makers coming into play. We're really excited about the two French cider makers. The one French cider maker, Duin, mm-hmm. is a family that's been doing cider since 1960. Christian Druin was the originator of this cidery, and also it's a kind of a winery, plus they make Calvados, and now his grandson is stepping in. Mm-hmm. The other company that we brought in is actually owned and operated by a female from France. So we have this exciting presentation to show you the two different types and their different styles, so that we can ask questions about what they do differently, what do they do similarly, and do they use the same apples and process.
Mm-hmm. And from what I could gather, both of these cideries are based in Normandy. There's two regions in France. So you have Brittany and Normandy. And so that should be very interesting, because the Musée du Poiré is in Normandy, and that's a magnificent museum to go to for anything, if you have that interest in pears. So that's going to be a fantastic, I'm sure that's going to be well attended, and I bet there's a limit to that workshop. Is that correct?
That workshop seats 240 people.
Good. Okay, great. All right, so that's happening. And then the next one I see that same day right after is Evaluating Single Varieties, and it's a tasting.
We have a gentleman that came from the University of Wisconsin, Matt, and Matt will be doing the Evaluating Single Varieties. I'm really excited about that course, because that course brings in 40 different single varieties that Matt has previously done a study on. And he will be speaking about different types of apples, different types of varietals, and then he will be showing the results from his tests on what each apple from different regions profiles.
Hmm.
He's also bringing the 40 different varieties for everyone to try. It's the first time we've done anything regarding single varieties.
Really? Wow, that's interesting. Well, that's going to be a well-attended workshop, too. Okay, well, let's keep on going. This is on Thursday, is in the afternoon, is on Calvados.
Very excited about the Calvados. Calvados is an apple brandy, and it's another educational seminar that we are introducing for the first time to CiderCon. We have one speaker, and that is Mr. Druin, mm-hmm. and his Calvados background is generations beyond generations. They have four different styles of Calvados that we'll be trying at the seminar. Mm-hmm. And each of them have a difference in the age. So we have one that is from 5 to 12 years. We have another age 15 years. We have some that are only 18 months. And he's very excited to be able to show a progress between the four different types of Calvados.
Mm. Yeah. From what I understand, those earlier Calvados are really something that you would use maybe for cooking. You don't even want to start thinking about drinking them until you're getting up to maybe 6 years. And is it really worth to really open that bottle until 20 years? So that's going to be very, very informative. Well done. Exciting workshop. Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4 tastings already. And then on Friday, it's like a ton of tastings. It starts off in the morning with sensory analysis, and that's with Charles McGonigal. I hope I'm pronouncing that his last name correctly.
Correct.
What can you tell us about that? Because this has taken place before, hasn't it?
This course took place 2 years ago. This course is also offered every year at GlindCap. Which is our competition, international competition, or international and domestic competition for ciders, pairies, and ice ciders. Charles' seminar is the most attended seminar in the past regarding sensory analysis. In this session, he teaches you the difference between a base cider and all the different aspects of either infection, changes, or allows you to understand a smell, flavor, or taste profile that you may be getting in your ciders. If you don't have a lab at your cidery, you really should go to the sensory analysis course, because your senses, your own flavor profiles, your own taste buds could actually detect something that is either wrong or right for your cider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to be a great, great presentation. Wonderful. Okay. You mentioned GlindCap. Now, the GlindCap is not part of the United States Association of Cider Makers. That's a different group. Am I correct on that?
You are correct, yes.
Okay. All right.
This is part of an organization out of Michigan.
Okay. All right. So we have Charles in the morning. I think that's at 10 a.m. in the morning. And then at 2 p.m. on Friday afternoon is the Northeast Ciders, and that's being led by Jen Smith.
Very excited about the Northeast Ciders. Last year in Portland, we had the West Coast Ciders tasting. This year, we're going with Northeast, and we'll be seeing cider from Edens, from Farnham Hill, from Eves, from Steampunk, and then Slyboro.
Hmm.
These cider houses are from Vermont, New Hampshire, and New York.
Right. And Jen Smith is the executive director of the New York Cider Association. So she should be a very interesting person to talk to, whether folks are New York cider makers who haven't yet met her, and just other association directors who will be attending CiderCon. So that's a really great thing having her there, because I do not think she was in Portland last year.
She was not. And she is a fantastic speaker, and she puts on fantastic fundraisers, events, and festivals. So, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So right after Jen Smith's presentation on the Northeast Ciders, then at 3:15, and I'm hoping that these times are right. I'm just kind of pulling them off the schedule. So, you know, if you're listening to this, don't worry about the time. Just look at your schedule. But the next one is on French Keeving, and that's with Dominique Lebrun.
Correct. French Keeving is a traditional style or method, excuse me, a method of creating a naturally sweetened sparkling cider. Mm-hmm. French peeving is something that in the United States, we do not have a lot of producers creating this method. This method is intense. It's a longer process, but it creates a very unique product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't think there's been any workshops on this yet, but just on the short of keeving, for folks who don't understand what that is, keeve the juice and then you ferment it. So it's a way to have all the nutrients drop out, and it actually doesn't drop, but actually rises to the top and creates that brown cap, the chapeau brun. And then you, once that's, it's like a hard pancake on the top, you make a puncture through that and siphon out the juice, and then you actually ferment that. And because it's so low nutrient, the yeast don't, they can't gobble up all the sugar. So you're left with a sweet cider that doesn't need that kind of back sweetening. It's just delicious and a very widely used method in both France and in the UK. We're going to go on to the next workshop, which is cheese and cider. And I see that you, Michelle, are one of the presenters for that. Who's the other gal that's going to be presenting that?
The other presenter is Holly Christopher. Holly Christopher owns her own company within wholesaling of cheese and charcuterie. Mm. She's a local company outside of Chicagoland. She's a local company outside of the Chicagoland area. Holly and her partner established Forage and Foster 3 years ago and has successfully managed to sell a lot of creameries and local farmers on the cheese and charcuterie.
So what is going to be taking place there? Do you come out with like little, like five different cheeses, and then you're pairing it with specific ciders? And do you have a sense right now what we're going to be doing, or are you still working with Holly on that?
Actually, we have it set. The positioning cheese and cider pairing in the marketplace, we decided to change the name from previous CiderCons. We've always done cider and cheese at CiderCons, but basically it was just pairing cider and cheese. And it's a great seminar, but how do you use pairing cheese and cider together in a marketplace? So for the first 5 to 10 minutes, Holly's going to explain her company, and then we're going to go into four different cider and cheese pairings. And then the rest of the seminar is going to be talking about how to take that knowledge and support yourself in the marketplace. How to actually sell cider using this method of cheese and beer pair, or cheese and cider pairing. Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant, because that's something that a lot of cideries, and if they have tasting rooms and they're doing the presentation, can really use that information. So what a great way to approach that particular topic. Well, let's move on to the next one, which is taking place. Again, this is, and let me see, the next one's at 5:30. I think this is the final one of CiderCon, and that's called Ciders of France. And that's the kind of the end of the actual CiderCon, and something that people do not want to miss. Can you tell us what we might be able to expect if we're attending?
What we're going to see at the French Grand Tasting is three different French producers that we've already spoken about in the seminars that we've seen previously. They're going to come out. They're going to be able to share with us three different types of ciders made from France. This room is open to 1,600 people, and they're bringing a lot of cider with them so that everyone has a taste for it. Each cider maker will talk about their style, their methods, and the apples they use. And then at the end of the seminar, we will use that room and them at the podium as the ceremony cheers for the end of CiderCon.
Yay. I know it was a ton of fun last year with the UK cider makers. So, and the French have a good sense of humor too. So it should be an amazing event, and people should really make sure that they attend that. Do you have a sense of how many people are going to be attending CiderCon at this point?
At this point, I think we're looking at 1,900 people, so it could be close to 2,000.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a great overview. And Michelle, while I have you, on this call here, and there's must be some kind of construction going on in the back. Are you at the new cidery and brewery? Can you give us a little bit of background on what you're actually doing in Chicago around cider?
I actually think I'm slightly crazy for doing this, but we are looking at opening a brewery and a cider house and a restaurant all under one roof. It'll be the first cider brewery restaurant, I believe, here in the city of Chicago and possibly the state of Illinois. We have some breweries that are wineries, but not cider.
When are you looking to have the doors open to the public there?
We're really hoping for summer of 2017. So this summer is going to be very exciting.
Wow. You're doing all that and also helping out so much with CiderCon. Big tip of the glass to you. That's amazing.
Thank you. I think that's why Eris is such a great name for this location, because it's the goddess of chaos. And I don't know how to survive unless I'm chaotic. So it makes total sense.
Well, we should hang out more together, because, you know, I have another podcast called Leading Chaos. And so the two go together.
Oh, my gosh. I could tell you so many stories.
Well, let's follow up on that once you do get going with that project there. And best of luck with that.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Now that you've whetted your whistle, let's head next to the main chat, where we're going to find out so much about Chicago, which will be really interesting for anyone going to Chicago's CiderCon, but also all the folks who are passing through Chicago knowing how to maneuver. I mean, shoot, if you have a layover at the main airport, it's not bad to go into the city and have a bit of cider fun. And you know, that can happen, so you might as well be prepared when you are next a cider tourist. Brian Ritson's title is Cider Director at The Northmen, which again is the first cider bar to open in Chicago. But I also really like his Twitter handle, which is Chicago Cider, because I think it fits him perfectly. This guy is passionate, and I happen to call him one of the most charismatic sommeliers of cider in the U.S. We pre-recorded this chat while having a bit of dinner before the Cider Salon took place at Cider Days, which is an annual cider festival that is actually the oldest cider festival in the U.S., and it takes place in Massachusetts. There'll be a link in the show notes to that. We had a little meet up at the table, and sitting up with us was The Nose and a friend, Lars. So let's head to this chat now as you and I grab a glass and join this chat with Brian Ritson of The Northmen in Chicago.
The Northmen open.
The Northmen opened just after the last conference. We had hoped, of course, to be open in time for the conference and Cider Summit, but we weren't able to do that. We opened mid-March of 2016, so it's been about, 7 months now?
You're like a the version of, like, almost like a sommelier.
Yeah, sure. We've been tossing the term pommelier around.
Pommelier, course, right? Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
But it sort of started a couple years ago when I approached the ownership group. They own a couple bars in Chicago.
Okay.
And it was a holiday party over 2 years ago, and I just went up to them and said, you know, listen, why doesn't Chicago have a cider bar, and why aren't you guys doing it?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he sort of looked at me funny with that. I had not known that they had already purchased a new building with plans to turn it into something.
Wow.
But cider bar wasn't what they were planning. So after I suggested it, a couple weeks later, the owner came back to me and just looked at me and said, yeah, cider bar, let's do it.
Cool.
All the way.
Cool.
And from that time till about 7 months ago, we've been working very hard to get it open and to create this place that we call the Northmen.
So what's the dimensions of the cider bar?
It's like, very small.
Okay.
It's got room for maybe 68 seats. we opened up a sidewalk cafe this summer, which maybe added about another 35 seats or so.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to next year have a back patio, which may open another 30 or so
mm-hmm.
seats.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, it's a 100-year-old building. It's housed a bar there for a couple decades before us. And it's small.
Okay.
The kitchen was really small. And if you're just, you know, doing grilled cheeses and stuff, you don't really need a big kitchen. But we're trying to do a few different things with a very talented chef and his crew. So we had to, you know, knock walls down, and we actually lost some room in the bar to gain another couple feet in the kitchen so servers could do pass-bys and give the cooks some room to create some stuff. So we lost even more of that small room we had inherited. But in the end, it's not such a bad thing because it creates a sense of coziness. When we first opened, we were very busy, and you just walked into the door and felt like something was happening, you know, because every seat was taken. There was a liveliness to it. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
So it gives us certain challenges in serving guests in those tight quarters, but we hope that the atmosphere makes up for it.
Yeah. So is there a range of taps? How many taps do you have?
We have five beers on tap, if you can believe it. We figured we still wanted to be a neighborhood bar, and we put five beers on there for people who didn't like cider or had enough cider. But we're
bringing along those beer lovers.
Yeah, like, you know, you want to be able to say, well, I'm not a big cider fan, you know, but my girlfriend is, let's go out together, whatever it is. So we do have five beers on tap. We have 20 ciders on tap. And probably all told, over 100 ciders available, bottles, cans, and draft.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
and are you pushing any of those ciders on, like, special gases, you know, like doing a nitro cider or anything like that?
We have not done a nitro cider. We're starting to talk to some cider makers about getting us nitro cider kegs just to see. Will it do anything real or good? We don't know.
Cream it up a little bit,
it does. Yeah, it might even create a little head on the top that holds somewhat, even though there's no gluten in there to hold the head. It still might be a little foamy top. We don't know. We'll see. We're going to play around.
Well, isn't it all about buzz, like with any kind of bar? You want to kind of create a buzz, a uniqueness.
Yeah.
I mean, your uniqueness from the get-go is that you're a cider bar.
Yeah.
But there's probably also a number of events that you have that you're pulling in. And are you looking at that over the course of a year? And again, knowing that you're just 7 months out of the gate, looking at different events that set up a seasonal type of experience for the visitor?
Yeah, well, when I get back to Chicago, the next couple weeks we will be doing a fall cider, you know, festival. And that will include other flavors, right? You know, so it's not going to just be apples. And we have ciders of all kinds on draft. So let's
hear a couple of those kinds.
On draft right now, you know, we have.
Is that the right way to say it, too, for cider on draft?
Yeah, why?
I don't know. You know, I always think draft as being a draft beer. Like, if I have wine, I don't know if I say wine on draft.
Sure, yeah. That's a good point.
You know, I would say wine on tap.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because most of our taps are wine taps.
They're
side poles, very sleek stainless steel, like really sharp.
Yeah.
The back tap line is where we have our beers, and then we also put ciders on the rest of that line.
Right.
So it's more like a traditional beer draft system.
Okay.
So yeah, maybe that's not totally proper vocabulary.
I'll think about that. That's all happening right now. Like, you're on the cusp of it.
Very much so.
Creating the culture.
Right. We feel like we know a lot, but we are still figuring this culture out. People are coming in with expectations. We have our own ideas, and we're not necessarily committed to them. We're here trying some things out, seeing how people react, and then coming up with new things. So so certainly, yeah. We'll have a fall cider event with, you know, cranberry in your cider, or even, you know, the oak maple from Seattle. Just flavors of fall, certainly right alongside our Farnham Hill and, you know, straight up Easy Orchard cider and things like that.
Are those some of your standards that you always have on?
Not always, but for the last 2 months, I have had on tap Farnham Hill continuously. I've had some sort of Easy Orchards on draft at all times for the last couple months. It's
not, and these,
like,
are both U.S. cideries, just to let Ciderville know. So Farnham Hill is from New Hampshire and Easy Orchard is from
Oregon.
Oregon, yeah.
And
both amazing cideries.
And we also have our house cider on tap. So
can you say more about that?
So the house cider is a blend that we sort of worked on with a Michigan cider maker, so we can offer folks a taste of cider when they come in, because we know that folks are going to be coming in curious, and you might have folks who've never had a cider in their life, or have had it, but, you know, think it's something, and we want to show them that it could be something else. So we have this blend that we've come up with. We feel it's, you know, a semi-dry, maybe on the slightly sweeter end of semi-dry, but not sweet, and something that can give the folks something to drink while they open up the menu and look through and see what they might want to taste. It also helps our servers sort of gauge a guest, and they come in and they'll be, you know, they take a taste of our house cider, and then our staff can come back and say, what did you think of that?
Right.
Oh, I liked it, but, you know, I was looking for something drier. Great, we've got that. You know, it's sort of an indicator where we might want to take the guest or where they might want to head next. Because we also have, you know, ciders with mangoes and habaneros in it, you know, strawberries, blueberries, Zinfandel, apple cider.
So you're not a pure cider bar.
Not at all. I mean, we are.
You know what I mean by that.
Yeah. I mean, we want to be a neighborhood pub. We want everyone to feel welcome there, and we want people to have all sorts of experiences. It's not our job to determine what people ought to be drinking. We're there to give people choices. And ask them questions. What do you like? Well, I like sweeter stuff. Great. That's okay. I'm a beer guy, but I'm not really into cider. Okay, we'll try a hop cider maybe. Mm-hmm. See if that tickles your fancy. It's we want to meet people wherever they are on this journey of cider. You know, if you're brand new and you want to check out a lot of different things, cool. If you've been into cider for 20 plus years and you know what you like and you want to find your particular blend, we'll do our best to get you there. But we don't want to be in the business of telling people what's good and what's bad. We just want to ask questions and get them to something that they'll enjoy.
Yeah, well, that's I think a good approach at this point, and I really respect that. Now, in terms of the range of ciders on tap, how many countries do you have on there, or is it primarily U.S. based?
Most of our ciders are from the U.S., but I always have a French cider on draft. I always have
from, like, Normandy or Brittany.
Yes, yeah. It's usually Le Brun from Brittany or Yves Dupont from Normandy.
Jerome Dupont. Now, yeah. Le Brun is going to be at CiderCon this year.
Yeah. So we're excited about that. It's cool. I mean, when we came up with the idea a couple years ago, there weren't that many options on draft. It literally, from the time we announced to the time we opened, my choices grew exponentially. The Spanish were not putting stuff on draft. They didn't understand that. Why would they? It'd be served wrong. And we sort of convinced them that, you know, give us a shot. Let us play around with it. Let us come up with solutions. So you were asking if we did anything special on tap with, like, nitro or things. We have a Spanish long pour tap, which is high above your head. And we put the glass well below so that it's simulating the high pour from the bottle.
Right.
And it falls in your glass. It creates that turbulence and creates the CO2. And the spectacle of that catches people's eyes. And immediately, one person orders it, three other people are ordering it in the next 10 minutes.
You gotta experience it.
Show me what that is. I gotta figure that out. And it's not for everybody. You know, it's, again, not everyone has to like every cider that we have. It's like when you go on vacation and you visit a town and you're like, it wasn't my favorite place, but I'm glad I went. You know, we want to show that experience and that journey.
Full round circle. Yeah.
So we have a Spanish long pour on draft at all times. We have a French. We have an English. I've had a Spal on since the day we opened.
Okay.
you know, I also, whereas the stuff like Hex is a lot more limited supply, and I treat people like, I've had it on quite a bit this fall, actually, but there's only one keg left in Chicago. So I've got that squirreled away in the basement.
Ooh.
So in mid-December, I can bring it out and have a best of 2016 event.
Oh, nice.
All my
nice.
Favorite ciders, nice. Some of our staff's favorite ciders. We've been squirreling them away through the years. We can bring them all out. Like, these were some of our favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not telling them that this is good and you ought to like it. This is what we enjoy.
Right.
We want to share that with you.
Well, you know, talking about that, and that and maybe we'll save this for another chat, but let's talk a little bit about cellaring cider.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a little bit different than you would do with wine and beer.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your thoughts on that with cellaring cider? Because, you know, it
I guess certain ciders certain ciders are better for it than others, I suppose. And I'm not, again, we're still figuring this out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a bottle of a cider out in Portland at the conference this past year that we know for a fact was over 5 years because we know when it shipped out to them and we found it in the store.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it, was at least 5 years old,
yeah.
And it was fantastic.
Right.
Whereas when I was, you know, if I talk to Steve Wood and tell him that I've got one of his old Dooryard still bottles in my my cellar, you know, from 2 years ago, he's like, would you please just, you know.
Just drink it.
No. He literally said, just find the hole in your sink and pour it down there. You know, he's.
Classic Steve Wood.
You know, it's like, that's what you should. Can you clean your sink out with that cider,
well,
please?
I'll tell you, though, you know, there's a store around here that's selling a 2010 Eric Bordelais. Argolette, and I got it and opened it up and I could tell it was off.
Yeah.
And but everybody having it thought, oh, this is really good, but I knew my spidey senses told me it wasn't right.
Yeah.
And then we went over and talked to Eric and I told him, you know, we had tried one of your 2010s and it wasn't good, and he kind of looked at me like a little incredulously and said, no, it cannot be true. So he went and hunted down one of his 2010s. And he didn't have that many. He found one. He opened it up, and it was excellent.
Yeah.
So it actually, I think he does feel it kind of does seller well. But that tells me a little bit of the transport there.
Sure.
And the storage.
Yes.
And
right.
That's going back to the cellaring.
Yes. Well, first, you know, he sends it over in 2010 or 2011, whenever it was ready. You know, that journey alone was a difficult journey.
And
you
know,
containers over the ocean.
I mean,
all sorts of things. This has been the difficulty with Spanish ciders too.
Yes.
Takes so long to come over. That cider's living and it's meant to be consumed fresh.
Yes.
It's not meant to
Teeth
be sold.
Natural.
Yeah. So you're not looking to find good vintages of Spanish cider. You want fresh.
Right.
Whereas the Hex that I'm pouring is the 2013 cider on draft, right? On tap, sorry. And so,
it's all good, man.
Right.
All good.
So, and that stuff's coming over usually from the importer in bulk, and they're kegging it on the East Coast.
Yeah.
So,
a little bit different, product.
And that works for me.
People
adore that. Now, it's a rough cider, it's a bit challenging. So, maybe that challenging aspect to it already is going to give you a lot of these difficult things, but it's not. It changes it certainly, but is it against what the cider maker wants? I hope not, because I think it's pretty tasty.
Right.
So,
right.
And that might be more durable in a keg than it is in the bottle, at least in that particular blend. Again, every cider is different. It depends on the amount. You know, English cider is loaded with tannin. You know, French cider is loaded with tannin.
That lasts a little longer.
That helps, right? Yeah.
Well, what temperature is your cellar? What are you keeping your
cellar? Well, that's the other difficulty, right? Because we've got beer and cider in there. We keep it pretty cold, though. And, you know, there's glycol lines that keep it chilled on the way up. People, even if the maker would rather us pour at a different temperature, there is expectations in American service about what cider should be served at. We can play some games and tell some things with them and say, hey, I really like this cider actually a little bit warmer. Do you mind if we take it out of the cooler and warm it up before we... And so it depends on each guest.
To the Northman. Can you pour my cider now? And I've done that.
Yes.
You know I've done that, especially, you know, with different pubs I know I'm going to. Pour it, I'm on my way, and let it sit on the counter and wait for me. Because it gets so darn cold.
A lot of our guests will order a cider... And then order another one and have a little bit
and then no sit there and let that warm up yeah. on the bar and then go back to it. Sure. Like, wow, as I let this sit here, yeah. so much more is opening up. Mm-hmm. Anything with the rough stuff from England, you don't need to let it warm up. It's going to be full of aroma and challenge already.
Yeah.
You know, more subtle ciders, say like a Farnham Hill, getting it a little bit warmer actually allows you to get some of those subtleties. We do accommodate our guests when they have those kind of mm-hmm. requests. So
you have cider and you have food.
Yeah, absolutely.
And is it like small plates or is it like...
No, I mean, it's a full bistro.
And now our food is coming and we're just going to... You keep on coming. Yeah, that's fine. Sure. This is all real.
That's me.
All right. Yeah. So we're getting some food here because we're all getting ready to go over to the cider salon. So we're kind of chowing down a little bit at our base. That's right, which is really important. This is part of being a professional cider hound.
That's right.
And we have a nice little sandwich kind of situation. I'm having a special chicken parmesan. What's a specialty food in Chicago?
Well,
like, what isn't a specialty food in Chicago?
Exactly.
Right?
Give us all the encased meats.
Encased meats? What does that mean?
You know, like sausages. You know, Wisconsin's a great sausage place, so we like our hot dogs and our bratwurst. But, you know, that's just typical, you know, pizza and bratwurst. That's a Chicago thing, right? It's not.
Pizza and bratwurst together?
No. Deep dish pizza we're known for, right? People in Chicago could really care less about deep dish pizza. You give it to your relatives when they come to visit.
Right, okay.
But we all eat pizza the same way everyone else does, you know? But at our restaurant, we try to elevate it a little bit. Yes, we have a burger there. We have fish and chips. But it's a little bit more expensive than your standard fried food fare because we're working so closely with our producers. We're getting fish flown to us fresh from Iceland. You know, not frozen blocks. We're not...
Wow.
We have our farmers literally bringing in, you know, a goat so that we can break down the whole animal and use it in our dishes. Not only do we did everything in our own kitchen, you know, down to grinding our own pickles. We make our own ketchup. And for the longest time, the only thing we didn't do was bake our own bread. As of 2 weeks ago, we now bake our own bread.
Wow.
So
I'm
we
excited.
Do everything. It's very labor intensive. It's the hardest part has been to produce really high quality food in such a small space, as I indicated before, and keep our labor costs down so that we're not in the kitchen 18 hours a day for service that's from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to 10 o'clock at night. Okay? I mean, we're there.
Service from 4 to 10, so the last order could go in.
For food.
Yeah.
Okay. 11 on weekends.
Okay, so,
And then on weekends, we also open up for brunch. We were open up for lunch during the summer, but we stopped that with the onset of fall. So we open up at 4 o'clock every day. We may open up for lunch or brunch throughout the week during the cider conference because we know there's going to be a lot of interest and a demand to check it out. Mm-hmm. And so we want to give everyone every opportunity to get in there at all hours because we know sometimes in the evening, I'm going to anticipate it's going to be quite busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, is Chicago broken down into, like, different neighborhoods?
Absolutely. It's a city of neighborhoods. A lot of them have names indicating the heritage of the early immigrant groups. You know, there's a neighborhood called Pilsen. It's more central Chicago, west or southwest of the downtown area where folks will be at the conference. Clearly settled by early Czech immigrants. They called it Pilsen.
Mm.
Now...
I love that.
Now it's... the Mexican neighborhood.
Mm.
You know, it is, when you say Pilsen, you are going to find the National Museum of Mexican Art in Pilsen.
Wow.
Right? Our restaurant is in Lincoln Square, which is typically the German neighborhood. They kind of call it Little Europe, but it's mostly German. And there are German, you know, Brauhauses and old, you know, the German American Cultural Center there. So it's you have these traditions of immigrant groups, but now those lines get blurred and, you know, Humboldt Park used to be the Polish neighborhood. Well, now it's the Polish and Mexican neighborhood, and they get along very well because their Catholic faith ties them together and they all go to church together.
Wow.
I mean, Chicago was all about parishes and who you met. I mean, my folks grew up in the south side of Chicago. My dad was German. My mom was Irish. They both went to a Catholic church. You know, that's how you be.
And look how good you came out.
Hey. The jury's still out on that.
Oh, I'm feeling pretty confident about that. So what we're, you know, going to like the Cider Conference, or what we call CiderCon. What neighborhood is that in? No,
that's downtown.
That's downtown.
That's on Michigan Avenue. This year it's going to be a little bit south than the where it was. Typically it's been along the Mag Mile, a little bit north on Michigan Avenue. Now it's going to be a little bit south on Michigan Avenue, closer to Grant Park.
Is it a good location in that
it's
way?
It's a great location. I mean, you're going to be close to the Art, you know, Institute. You're going to be close to Millennium Park and Grant Park and the lake and Buckingham Fountain.
All like walkable distance?
Oh, yeah, okay. You're going to be, I mean, as much as you want to walk around in February. Chicago.
It's cold, isn't
it?
Yeah,
we've had some really cold and really intense snow snaps for some of these conferences. And when you're downtown, as I think many cities, large American cities are like this, there are cool places to hang out, but a lot of them are for the 9-to-5 workers, you know, the office crew coming in on commuter trains, and there's not a lot of neighborhood joints,
At night.
At night. There's not going to be as many options for folks to go to that are more quaint. There are places to go to, but they're going to be sort of, not corporate, I don't want to say that, but just sort of larger, more tourist-driven places. So you're going to want to escape into the neighborhoods, and it's just, you call up a taxi, you go, and...
What about public transportation?
Sure. I mean, so if you were to take the L train from downtown up to the Northman, it would probably take you 45 minutes, only because it's the oldest L line that we're off of, and it's the one that winds. Oh. A lot of them are straight shots. The brown line winds through neighborhoods.
Okay.
So it goes slower, and it takes more stops.
So taxi or Uber?
Yeah, taxi or Uber, you can get there in 15 minutes probably. Depending if it was, you know, 5 o'clock and it was traffic, you know, it'd be a little bit longer.
Right.
But just, you know, tell your guy to shoot right up Lakeshore Drive. He'll be there. You hit Lakeshore, take it up to Montrose, head Montrose west, about a mile and a half, 2 miles, and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Lincoln Avenue. Lincoln Avenue stretches. Chicago's on the grid, right? There's all north, south, east, west. After the Great Chicago Fire, which wiped out most of the downtown, it allowed the city planners to start over. And so everything was meticulously planned. That's why Chicago has alleys and New York doesn't.
Right.
We built all these things in there. And so everything's on this north, south, east, west grid on a numbering system. Mm-hmm. 0 point is downtown at State and Madison. And you go so many hundred north or so many hundred west, and that sort of tells you where on the grid you are. Several streets are on a northwest diagonal, like Elston or Milwaukee Avenue, as Lincoln Avenue. And that starts in Lincoln Park along the lake and heads northwest, and you take it up to just before Montrose Avenue, and that's where we are.
Perfect. And that's probably like a really like little bit of a neighborhood place, because I remember when I was... At CiderCon last year, I could like walk outside of the building, and that in that way they had a lot of the events offsite from the main hotel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kind of here, try this on Wednesday and all that, right? That was over at the
The museum.
Yeah, museum. Yeah, that was fantastic.
That was great.
But this time it's going to be right in the hotel, which, you know, February.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit more... I walk across that bridge in Portland, you know, on my way back to the hotel.
That
was such a cool walk.
Yes, I know.
Lovely.
Yeah,
so it'll be a bit more challenging. But...
Awesome. Everything's fantastic. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. If I can bring you anything, just let me know.
Thank you. And there will be lots of events at other venues throughout the week. Different... Cider companies will have set up events throughout the week to do, you know, promotional. You know, I remember a couple years ago we did a cider karaoke event at the Emporium Arcade Bar. It's one of those new video game arcade bars that had a stage in the other room. We went up there and sang karaoke and, you know, made fools of ourselves just to get people together and be social.
Mm-hmm.
So
that sounds fun.
So I know lots of stuff will be happening, and I think there's going to be plenty for people to do, and they should be doing that. I mean, you can't just say, well, the only thing we're going to do is go to the North End because it's the cider bar. Cider has gotten to the level in Chicago where every bar is going to have a cider on draft.
Is it going to be like a pretty standard style cider, or is it going to be really more artisanal?
Well, there's a little bit of both. I mean, we're still fumbling with our definitions, but... you know, Vandermill is a very large cider company in Chicago.
Right.
They're based in sure. Michigan, but they really did a lot to open Chicago up to cider as mm-hmm. even a, as an option. And, you know, whereas you and I might say, well, that's just really good, well-made, standard cider, right? They're not, you're not getting this, you know, cider that's been fermented for 5 months with all these heirloom apples. You're getting Michigan heirloom apples in there. Right. You're getting your Baldwins and your Northern Spies and things like that. But you're also going to get a lot of your other apple varieties in there. So you'll see a little bit of both. I mean, I think...
I'm impressed that I would find them on tap. I'd be happy if I came to a place around here and found them on tap.
Oh, yeah. You're gonna, you'll see every bar in Chicago is going to have at least... And I'm not, again, not cider bar, not just for a cider week event.
Right.
There is a cider on draft in every bar in Chicago. And they're gonna. It's going to be Vandermill. It's going to be Uncle John's. Might be Citizen Cider. So there's going to be options. We keep talking about when is the year for the second draft handle, where every bar has two. That kind of happened last year.
Really?
Not every bar
like
has
2015.
Two. Yeah, but a lot did.
Hmm.
A lot picked up that second line. And now even your sports bar might have two ciders. You might have 24 drafts, and at least two of them are going to be ciders. You know, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I know sports bars that have four ciders on tap.
That is impressive.
And anything from Vandermill to Uncle John's to some more rarefied stuff, some easy orchards and things like that.
Wow.
Trying to, you know, challenge people a little bit here and there, give them some options and see.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
Go Chicago.
Yeah.
Huh?
It took us a while to get our beverage scene in order. Our whole beer explosion was late to the game in many ways. You know, Madison, Wisconsin has been making really good beer for decades, and Chicago kind of got a late start. But now, I would say Madison is envious of what Chicago is doing in the beer scene because of the amount of excellent brewers, the amount of collaboration, the community that we've developed. And you have the Cicerone program there, the Siebel Beer Brewing Institute. There's a lot of infrastructure, a lot of knowledge base for smart beer drinkers in Chicago.
Yeah.
That also, I think, created and laid the groundwork for just adventurous drinkers who then picked up on cider and said, wow, maybe there's something more to cider than just the one or two options I've seen before growing up.
Right.
So so now they've certainly embraced it, and I love it because it blurs those lines, whereas I'm a cider drinker, I'm a beer drinker, you know, it's like politics or religion, like Democrat, Republican, you're only one or the other, right? Well, no, I drink beer.
So,
yeah, I drink cocktails, I drink wine. So I love that people are switching it up. You want something new? Well, here's something new.
I was thinking it might be kind of neat if you could share like little tidbits of these are really good eateries to go to. Like for CiderCon attendees, like some little tips. Because I know I've seen lots, you know, I'm kind of one of those travel show addicts where I love to see, like, you know, what's happening in Chicago. And it's all like the food-a-trom, you know.
Yes.
Like, you just want to go there just to eat food.
Yes.
So is there anything you would say, and, you know, it could be on the range of, like, the cheap eats versus, you know, folks who really say, yeah, I want to have that special dinner with somebody.
There was we used to have the cider conference at the Hilton along the Mag Mile. And very close to that is a place called Jake Melnick's. And Jake Melnick's is just a cool little bar known for, you know, hot wings. But they have a great cider program. And during the conference, for several years now, they've been very involved in the cider conference community, preparing and doing special events every day of the week.
Awesome.
And you can, that week, you'd be able to go to Jake Melnick's and probably find four or five ciders on draft, no problem, maybe even more. And cans and bottles and all sorts of options. So they're very hip to cider in sort of a cool, relaxed pub, you know, it's just... They get voted best wings a lot of times in the city. That's very good, but still just, you know, bar food.
Right.
You can always go to Randolph Street, what we call Restaurant Row. That's where places like Girl and the Goat are. You know, these
Girl
places,
and the Goat.
You know,
what is that? What is that?
Oh,
I need to know that.
You got to check that out. That's Stephanie Izzard. She's basically has started a food empire in Chicago. She was a Top Chef contestant years ago and took a long time to get her restaurant open after that aired. But when she opened to great acclaim. And now she's got a place called Little Goat, which is more of a diner. And now she's got Duck Duck Goat, which is an Asian spin on her cuisine. So She's amazing stuff up and down there. Randolph Street is known for a lot of, you know, Au Cheval is there and all these really intense, cool restaurant experiences. There's a place at the very end of Randolph Street called Kaiser Tiger. It's owned by the folks at Patty Long's, which is a beer and bacon bistro up in Lincoln Park, Lakeview area. But they went down there and got a place on Randolph Street, and sort of a German, you know, sausage food type place. A lot of bacon, a lot of this, that. Mm-hmm. But there's also like long tables on sort of the German style, family style thing there. And they have some really good ciders there too. Mm. It's right near the United Center, so people stop there on their way to Blackhawks games and they hang out. In the winter, he puts a curling thing out in the back patio.
Wow.
The beer patio.
Outside.
Yeah, you're not going to hang outside in the winter, but if give somebody curling and give them a little bit of whiskey, and you know they're going to go out there. And so he does stuff like that. So really a cool spot, Kaiser Tiger.
Awesome.
I mean, very close, you know, for folks downtown who don't want to go far into a neighborhood.
So
you still have to take a cab there, probably.
Anything I could take on the L train, because when I go to these cider conferences, like you, I walked across that bridge, actually, a couple times when I was in Portland last year. And I like to kind of get into the local flavors.
Sure.
I do like trying the public transportation, because otherwise you're just cabbing it and you're not really feeling it. Is it just the L train that goes by that area, or are there other trains too?
Well, it's all the L train, right? There's just different lines.
Okay.
They're all named for colors. So the blue line takes into some neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
The red line runs north and south along the city closer to the lake.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go see a Sox game on the south side on the red line, or a Cubs game on the north side.
What kind of Sox?
So the White Sox, right?
Uh-huh.
So the Chicago White Sox play in the south side. You take the red line down there. You want to go see the Cubs on the north side, you take the red line there.
Okay.
The brown line is the oldest. And we call it the L in Chicago, E-L, as in elevated. There are parts downtown where the trains go underneath, but a lot of places downtown, the trains are above ground.
There must be a good view from the trains. That's worth doing.
You really get a feel of kind of how the city's laid out. I mean, you're not high above, but you really get to see something. But you also get to look right into people's office windows and see what's going on and how many different activities are happening in the city. So, there's tons of stuff there along the line.
I'm wondering about, you know, I'm going to be flying into O'Hare.
Yeah, it's a large airport.
Yeah.
It's a hub, so, you know, it's not like they're
especially in the winter,
it's not like they're not good at what they do. It's just when that many flights go in and out, you're bound to get stuck there.
But and weather.
This might change your mind a little bit about O'Hare. You know, when you fly in, you get an airport code on your baggage.
Mm-hmm.
You fly into L.A., you're flying into LAX, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Chicago, you fly into O-R-D.
O-R-D.
And that stands for Orchard Field.
Oh my goodness.
O'Hare Airport, a long time ago, was a tiny little regional airport, and it was called Orchard Field. And there was a little ping transponder, and that was the symbol that would come up. We're flying into ORD, and that just stuck over time when it got built up and became O'Hare.
Wow.
So ORD has nothing to do with O'Hare. It has to do with O-R-C-H-A-D, Orchard Field.
Wow, that's super
cool.
That's a good little, I don't know, who wants to be a millionaire type of thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Call in Brian when you're there.
Phone a friend.
So what about like the transportation from the airport to the city?
Mm-hmm. The blue line.
The blue line, really easy.
The blue line ends at O'Hare. You get on it, it's going to take you to Chicago.
Take you to Chicago, and then from there to get to like the Hilton?
Straight downtown. Stay on the blue line. There's something called the Loop.
Okay.
All the lines head towards the Loop, and the Loop is downtown Chicago. And what it means is the L line goes in a large oval, and they all meet in there and go around it and then spin back out to another direction. So you take the blue line down to the Loop, and you could, from there, you could walk to your hotel.
Pretty easy.
Yeah.
Good. Because, you know, that's what I did when I came from Portland. It was really, really easy.
Mm-hmm.
PDX to the CiderCon last year versus, again, taking a cab. So is that what you'd recommend, doing public transportation versus a cab, going in and out of the city?
Yeah.
Okay.
A cab would cost you $25, $30 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
The L would cost you $2.
Perfect. I was wondering the hours for the Northman.
We open Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Food starts there at 4. Our kitchen during the week is open till 10 p.m. And we stay open every night till 2 a.m. On Saturdays, we open up for brunch at 11:30. We have a midday nosh menu where, like, maybe for an hour or so, our kitchen can reset and get ready for dinner service. You still get food and stuff there, a lot of good stuff, but still fewer choices. And then the dinner menu kicks in again at 4, and we keep the kitchen open till 11 on weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And we stay open till 3 a.m. on Saturdays.
Wow.
So
3 a.m., wow.
Yeah.
Chicago,
right?
City that does not sleep.
That's
huh?
right. You know, most bars in Chicago by law are 2 a.m. You don't have to stay open to 2 a.m., but that's as long as you can stay open. There's probably 24 bars or so, maybe less, that have a 4 a.m. license. On wow. Saturday, everyone's license is extended an hour. So ours goes till 3, 4 a.m. bars go till 5 a.m.
When you go into the Northman, should you make a reservation or do you take reservations?
We do not.
You do not, okay. Good to know.
If we're filled up, guests can leave their phone number.
Okay.
And we have a system, a wait list,
mm-hmm.
that when your name comes up on the list and the table's ready, we will test you.
Well, some places are worth the wait. But if you want to make sure to get a seat and enjoy some amazing ciders, join me on February 7th, the day before Chicago's CiderCon kicks off. At 4:30 p.m., I'll be at the Northman, sitting in the back booth and chatting it up. I'll have my podcast recorder, and I hope you'll be there to share your cider stories. I'd like to thank Brian Rutzen for joining me in this chat and sharing so much about his knowledge on that amazing city. There's a lot there. You could check it out all on the show notes for this episode, number 65. There's details on the public transportation, some of the restaurants he mentioned, contact for Brian, and also the Northman. If you enjoy this Cider podcast and, like so many, wait for it to come out every week to find out what's going on around the world in cider? Well, I hope you will consider today joining the 11 other people who are patrons of this podcast. Right now, Cider Chat gets $88 per month to produce this amazing podcast. And I don't think I'm kind of stretching it, because I do know every single person that's been on this show is amazing. It's pretty darn easy, and it doesn't cost a lot. If all you could do is give a dollar a month, that would mean a lot to me. Because all those little dollars add up to something that might actually get me over $100 a month to help produce this podcast. So I hope you'd consider that today by going to the Patreon website. That's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And just Google Cider Chat. I'll be looking forward to staying in touch with you while I'm in Chicago in February, both at the Northman, at the Chicago CiderCon, and then at Chicago Cider Summit. It's going to be tons of fun. You can follow along at CiderChat on Twitter, CiderChat Ciderville on Instagram, and of course, the CiderChat Facebook page. In the meantime, I'm rolling out of here because this episode has gotten me thirsty for some cider. This is Rhea Wincoller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.